integrative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcast, live radio broadcast, music labels, podcasts, video news, and various user interaction features in the game. Various interesting
we'll be right back. celebrated annually on March 3rd, the World Wildlife Day is an international celebration of the immense variety of life on our planet and a call for the protection of the endangered species all around the world. And for a listener, we as a human being need to conserve the animals, and all of them that can conserve is the veterinarians and also the wildlife protection unit. And right now, in today's special interview with the theme of World Wildlife Day, we have here veterinarian Gilang Dirmawan Putradatsa. How are you, Gilang?
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm good. So happy to be part of the World Wildlife Day for this year, and I hope that we can give us some explanation and understanding about what we can do with our wildlife on this day.
Okay. So, Gilang, I would like to ask you, the role of the veterinarian in the Wildlife Conservation Day is usually doing what? Is it like the health of the animal, conserving it, like giving it good diet for the animals to eat, or make sure that the health condition of the animals is preserved?
Yeah. So basically, for the work of veterinarian in wildlife conservation, the basic is treatment and prevention of disease. But then we also take roles in the traffic of the animals in the quarantine, so to ensure that no disease come to human or from human to the wildlife and etc. So the basic is treatment and prevention of disease from and to animals.
Okay, Gilang. So what animals do you usually taking care of as your time as a veterinarian here?
So when I being a veterinarian, the animal that I take care, we have orangutan in Kalimantan and also sun bear in Kalimantan too. Yeah.
Sun bear.
Mostly primates.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is taking care of the animals that you usually taking care of, usually primates, is there any challenges that you usually face when taking care of the animals there?
Yeah, so it's a common challenge in wildlife medicine. The first of all, the lack of appropriate tools and medicine for wildlife, because even for small animal practice that is commercialized in not also Indonesia but in the world, we still face challenge about tools, diagnostic tools, and then also medicine. And it's quite multiplied in wildlife animals, not only because the initial difficulties, but also because in wildlife medicine, sometimes you have to treat them on the side. So if you have orangutan, you will have to treat them sometimes inside the forest and have no time to take them to clinic and treat them properly. So that's the challenge.
Oh, so speaking of primates, does the metabolism of primate doesn't seem too far with human beings, because primate is the animal that is currently almost the same as us humans?
Yeah. For the metabolism, I can say it's about the same. So we are mostly got help also from human doctor about medicine, dosing, and also other technique that usually we use in human to extrapolate into the primates.
Okay. And what usually is the common diseases for the animals that is currently in the wildlife that you are taking care of in the forest?
Yeah, for the most common disease is parasites. As I said before, there are diseases that can go from animals to human and vice versa. So usually it's parasite that comes from human that harm the animals. We also have found the case of hepatitis and tuberculosis in orangutan. So mostly it's disease from human that cause harm to the wildlife animals, because in the wild they also got disease, but it's kind of self-limiting and not that endangered to them as a species.
Oh, so animals can also take diseases from humans, like tuberculosis and the one that you mentioned before.
Yeah, hepatitis.
Hepatitis, yeah. Yeah. And how do you treat and diagnose the animals that have diseases like that? Do human doctors all also contribute in saving the animals also?
Yeah. So since this disease is detected in humans, we use methods that usually use in humans also for detection, like tuberculosis. We use acid staining, just like what we did in Indonesia in detecting the tuberculosis in human. So acid staining, and then radiography, and also in hepatitis we check the blood for looking for the virus and the count, like that.
Okay, so since animals can have diseases from humans, do animals have like stress levels that you as a veterinarian usually take care of? Like, how do they deal with stress? Do you ask them to play or stuff like that?
Yep. So to alleviate the stress on wildlife animals, we usually give them enrichment, which is, we can say it's toys. So when we feed them, we don't not only give them just the food, but we usually put them in some container like bamboo or balls, like something that they have to play and to explore to get the food. And also for animals like orangutan, we put branching area, because they are arboreal species, mean that they live in above the tree, so they are swinging like Tarzan. So we need to accommodate that behavior to reduce their stress level.
Okay, so based on your experience from what I can see here as a wildlife supervisor, have you ever had difficulty managing conflicts between the humans and animals? Because I usually seen like news where animals get into the home of the humans, and then like there's like a little conflict between them because animals don't know how to act in the human area.
Yep. Conflict between animals and human is a long-standing issue, especially in wildlife veterinary medicine, because usually the victim is wild animals. So we can't just blame so this is the human's fault or this is the animal's fault, because as we know, we are as human need to expand our area. But in other hand, if we don't do it with caution and calculation, we will just destroy the environment. So most of the time, the conflict that we in my workplace phase is usually when orangutan came to plantation to destroy the plants. Usually it's palm oil plantation.
So how do you educate the public that the importance of wildlife conservation? Because since animals don't think the way that humans do, is there a way to educate the citizens that currently lives beside the animals to like understand that animals usually do that without thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to educate them first, because everything we do won't be satisfying or won't yield any result if we don't do education. So first of all, in the area of conflict, we advocate for the human in contact that if you see the animals in this case is orangutan, mm-hmm. please don't disturb them. Call BKSDA, which then will relay the news to us, and then we will do relocation or rescue depend on the orangutan health status. So that's the education that we, the first and foremost education that we do for the people that living in the area that have conflict with wildlife. And also we educate to school in the area to the children what is orangutan, what's their purpose in the forest and the environment, because words of child to their parents mm-hmm. is better, the best communication than we as educator ever to their parents. So if we talk to their parents mm-hmm. like, don't shoot orangutan, don't do this, don't do that, they will just, say, ah, meh, they are pests. But if their kids talk about that, mm-hmm. they will listen and then they will do it eventually.
Oh, so the best way is telling the kids, and then the kids will tell the parents on how to preserve it. Ah, I see. Okay, okay. So how can humans understand and respect the space of the wildlife? Because since humans is not the first one to step foot in the lands of nature, how do you usually educate them that we need to live side by side, but things can be done correctly?
Yeah. So basically, we always educate that environment and in the bigger picture, this earth is a complex web of mechanism that every beings have their own purpose. So like for in this case, orangutan, we taught the people what their function in this forest environment. So basically, orangutan did is propagating seeds because they got preference for some trees, and then they can go travel maybe 10 or more than 10 kilometers a day, so they can propagate the seed, and then in long term, keeping the forest fertile. So that's what we educate the people. So with the good forest, we can prevent some of catastrophe things that may happen if we lost the forest, like landslide and then flooding. Mm. Also, we teach the people on the perimeter of the wildlife area that by keeping the orangutan safe, they are keeping their livelihood too safe. So, yeah, sometimes people still hunt or gather food in the forest, and if the forest is gone, then their food is gone too.
And so the final question, and maybe I want your answer, that the first one, what happens to the animals that the nature, I mean the forest that's been missing? Do you as a veterinarian usually like keep them in somewhere safe first and then find a rehabilitation center and then send them back? And what do you do when animals lost their homes usually?
Okay, so in my workplace, mm-hmm. our goal is to release them back to their habitat, to wildlife. So if we found like orangutan in an area, in a good condition, still very wild, and yeah, with minimal health problems, we usually just relocate them to other side of the forest that not in contact with human population. But if we found them in a malnourished state or just injured a dangerous injury, we usually take them to our place and then treat them until they can fend for themselves and release them back in the wild. But if we decide to tag them, is it's usually it can range between a year or maybe there are cases that it's almost 15 years in the captivity before they can release, because we need to train them how to be wild again. We need to ensure that they got the skills to survive in the wild and can fend off for themselves.
Thank you so much, Gilang, for your time here interviewing with us. And Void listener, as we celebrate the World Wildlife Day, let's remember that protecting our planet's incredible biodiversity is a shared responsibility, and every action counts. So whether it's conservation efforts, sustainable choices, or simply just raising awareness, it is necessary for all beings here in this planet, and let us continue making the difference. And also, Void listener, thank you so much for tuning in this special interview in World Wildlife Day. And don't go anywhere. Stay tuned with us in Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Voice of Indonesia.
Indonesia prepares 180 trillion Indonesia rupiah cash for Ramadan Idul Fitri. Bank Indonesia has allocated 180.9 trillion Indonesian rupiah in cash for the 2025 Ramadan and Idul Fitri celebration. This amount represents a decrease of 1.6% compared to the last year's allocation of 183.8 trillion rupiah. The amount of exchange money, which was limited to 4 million Indonesian rupiah last year, has been increased to 4.3 Indonesian rupiah this year. To avoid crowds when exchanging money, Bank Indonesia requires exchangers to fill out a form on the Bank Indonesia Pintar application. And yes, well listener, we are still currently have 30 minutes more until the next hours, and 2 hours more until the opening fast here in Jakarta, Indonesia. So stay tuned while listening to Pasrah.
Thank you. cuisine in Indonesia must have special foods that characterize the area. Somas Manggarai. It has a variety of culinary heritage. One of the most popular souvenirs from Manggarai Flores is Kompiang cake. Is also known as Kompiang Longa. This typical cake of Flores looks like round or oval and has a brownish color topped with sesame seeds. The word Longa in the Manggarai Flores language means sesame. That is why this cake is called Kompiang Longa. Kompiang, which is an adaptation of mainland China, was initially only served at family events. But now this cake has become more famous and has become Flores' typical souvenir. Kompiang is appropriate to enjoy for breakfast and a cup of hot coffee. You can easily find it in traditional markets, Flores' typical souvenir centers, and even in roadside coffee shops. Kompiang is almost the same size as a tennis ball. Kompiang can last for 3 days at room temperature and even 1 week when it is stored in a refrigerator. For each portion, kompiang costs 1,000 rupiah.
Right. good and the price is relatively cheap. Sometimes there are some crabs only sold here which are not available in Bandung. I think the quality is relatively good. They can be found any kinds of souvenir here to be brought to other city or abroad. Yes, the price is affordable and the quality is good. Those are the recognition of most visitors at the Woven Craft Center in Rajapola. According to the visitors, typical woven of Rajapola has high quality with affordable price. However, there are unyielding spirit of Rajapola woven businessmen behind the visitors' admiration. Rajapola is a sub-district in Tasikmalaya Regency, West Java, which is famous for its woven crafts. Split by the southern lane of Java Island, anyone can find the region easily. Moreover, there are shops displaying various forms of woven crafts along the street. Woven craft is fiber that is set to form an object, such as basket, fan, bag, and even the wall of home. Weaving techniques and handicraft businesses are inherited through generations in Rajapola. Before selling to the shops along the street of Rajapola, the woven crafts are processed in the surrounding villages. Not far from the noisy Rajapola street, it is located the quiet Sukarwas Creative Village. It is only heard the sound of river flow, insects, friction of leaves, and vehicles that rarely pass it. While the local residents are busy to run handicraft businesses in their homes respectively. Right across the welcoming board of Sukarwas Creative Village, we met Pak Asep, one of the woven craftsmen who lives there.
Turun temurun, ya mungkin dari kakek juga mungkin.
Already 3 years, it is from grandfather. Actually, there are from parents, colleagues in this village too. It was approximately 15 years ago from 2002, if I'm not wrong. Pak Asep's woven products are quite variety, starting from wallets, bags, baskets, and others. Almost all of their products are sent to craft centers in various regions in Indonesia. The main material are usually used by Pak Asep, including pandanus and mendong. Pak Asep also shared about the production process of his craft business, which is apparently done in group. They serve as pattern maker until craftsmen. The weaving is brought to the house, so it cannot be made at a shop or craft center. With the handicrafts ranging from raw materials to finished crafts, consisting of 5 places. Firstly, we took raw materials from the sea. Then we make coloring. After that, it is brought back here. Then the material is delivered to homes to be processed into bags and brought here again. After that, we bring it to the craftsman who can make clothes, then given accessories. After that, the products can be sold. The point is that almost all manufacturing processes involve many people. Dozens of Pak Asep's woven products are made of pandanus and mendong leaves, made by dozens of pairs of hands of the craftsmen. One of the craftsmen is Pak Ojang. He admitted that his family had been long time running the profession as woven craftsmen. We also asked Pak Ojang to give an example of the weaving process. Before starting, Pak Ojang showed some of the simple equipment he usually used. The tool depends on the material of woven crafts. This is a wire for pulling.
This is a hammer. It is to beat up so that it will be solid. This mold is made of wood. This is for bats and it depends on size. This is the smallest. Pak Ojak's wooden mold is very simple. 5 wooden blades are strung like a fringe. The widest part becomes the base. 2 more blades nailed to the 2 base ends of the mold becomes the side of the mold. Then the last 2 blades are mounted on the side edge, becomes the top mold. 20 small nails are used at the top of the mold. Pak Ojak showing how to do a weaving process. At glance, the process is quite simple like sewing or knitting. His hand deftly guide dozens meters of mandong wrapped around the mold. However, it's quite difficult for Pak Ojak to give an explanation while weaving. The process can take 3 hours. For those who are proficient, can do it only an hour. How many days do you usually make the bags? It depends on the condition, sometimes 5 or 6 days. Yes, it really needs to be painstaking. The concept of zero mistake, in another word, without any mistakes, is really applied to Raja Pola woven cuffs. If making one mistake, the craftsman must repeat the process from the beginning. Patience and accuracy become the key of maintaining Raja Pola's unique woven quality. So, it's no wonder if the Raja Pola woven is quite famous in the country, even abroad. After seeing the making process of woven crafts behind the stage, we return to Raja Pola Street to find out how Raja Pola's typical woven clothes was appreciated. We met Ibu Popong, the owner of a woven crafts shop, who has been selling for 13 years at Raja Pola Craft Promotion and Marketing Center. However, from Ibu Popong, we listen to a very different reality. Currently, purchasing power of the visitors decreased since the woven crafts are already available in the city centers. The craftsmen send it directly, so the visit to Raja Pola has a little bit reduced. Some people still interesting to shop, but on one bus, only a few passengers buy the woven products. So we cannot expect a lot from the visitors. The southern line of Java Island, including Raja Pola, was usually visited crowdly at certain moments, such as long holidays, Lebaran or New Year. Those are golden moments for the sellers in Raja Pola to gain many buyers. However, according to Ibu Popong, the situation in the last few years cannot be expected.
Ada tanggal merah kan lumayan ya.
Jumat Sabtu Minggu biasanya.
It's quite great on the weekends such as Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The situation has now tipped. Previously, the shop was crowded by many buyers on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but now weekday is better. The same opinion, also stated by Pak Asep. He said sales figures have dropped drastically. In last 3 years, we could sell 300 pieces in a week. Currently, we have many competitors. 3,000 pieces can be sold in 2 weeks for once delivery. While previously, we could send 3 times every week. Really, it has decreased. The lower number of buyers at the craft center impacted at the lower income of businesses, which has an impact on the income of the craftsmen. Our needs continue to run, but we do not have stock. That's the grief. We have no support for our daily need. The craftsmen look for other income to meet their needs.
then we are looking for other ways, although the income is uncertain. It is worrying enough that Rajapola is not as glorious in the past. If it keeps happening, it is not only people's economy, but also Rajapola crops can be extinct as the time goes by. But there is hope. The development infrastructure in many regions, including in Tasikmalaya, can be a golden opportunity. As stated by head of micro, small, medium enterprises, industry, and trade of Tasikmalaya City, Muhammad Firmansyah.
Karena kita juga sekarang punya bandara, Bandara Wiryadinata.
Since we now have Wiryadinata Airport, there is direct flight from Tasikmalaya to Halim Perdana Kusuma every day. Then it has also additional route from Tasikmalaya to Solo. We will see new access to Kertajati Airport development in Majalengka that will become an international airport. Next month, there will be operated to replace Hussein Airport and Halim Airport because the two airports have quite crowded. Since Kertajati Airport will be provided as an international airport, there will be road access that passes through Tasikmalaya. Besides international flights, there will also be open domestic flights between Kertajati and Wiryadinata Airport. We will found a marketing center and outlets. Besides conveying government's plan in the future, Firman said that so far the local people of Tasikmalaya, including Rajapola, can always find out solutions. For example, during the economic crisis, they did find difficulties to get the capital.
Ya, kita semua maklum tantangan terberat kita di sini dari sisi permodalan, kan? Nah, dari sisi permodalan, tentunya saya akui saja untuk masyarakat Tasikmalaya ini kreatif. Dan masalah permodalan dia selalu bisa untuk
I admitted that Tasikmalaya community are very creative. For capital problems, they can find a way out. I can see they were not dependent on the capital. They were familiar with the crisis. And in the 1970s, during the economic crisis, it was not affected the community. We carry out the development of creative industries through superior products. And this is a utilization rather than an economic capability that may not depend on matters relating to fiscal policy at the time. Many companies ran out of business. Many industries did not work because loan repayments are quite large. But the industry in Tasikmalaya continued to run, even able to support the regional economy. Including businessmen of Rajapola woven crafts, such as Eko Winarko, a reseller of bagged woven crafts. Without having a store, he can get additional income every month.
Gak terbayang gak gimana pesanan? Ada lah satu bulan sekali, Man.
I cannot imagine how about the order. I've got an order once in a month. I have not met customers. I believe I met them by Facebook, social media. Then I called them. Then I sent the order amounted 30 million, 40 million. This is true. Ibu Popo also has similar experience like Eko Winarko. Lack of visitors must be anticipated by funding buyers through internet.
Sekarang juga dibantu sama online. Masih untung lah sekarang.
Market by online can help us. Online market is currently trend among public. I also join Lazada, Tokopedia, Shopee online store. I have also ever sent wallet to foreign countries such as Morocco. I also sent packet woven craft to Germany. It was a lot purchasing. I sold every day in order to increase income. Thank you. were assumed as pests. But creative hands of Rajapola people, grass and mandong can be beneficial and even become breadwinners. The life of Rajapola people is like a woven. Every hope as light that you never loses. The hope is woven with all your heart into a strong structure and resilience.
A total of 10,000 students from across Indonesia joined the opening of the 2025 National Ramadan Pesantren for Students, initiated by the Indonesian Islamic Education Teachers Association. In collaboration with the Ministry of Religious Affairs, this year's PRPN, held from March 3rd until 5th, 2025 at the Great Mosque of Central Java, combines both offline and online formats. The program aims to deepen students' religious knowledge while promoting values of modernization, care, and leadership in everyday lives. The next news. The Ministry of Marine Affairs and Fisheries has confirmed that fish stocks and prices at fishing ports remain stable and controlled during Ramadan 2025. The Directorate General of Capture Fisheries, Lotharia Latif, reported that fish production at Nizam Zahman Port in Jakarta, including tuna, squid, and other fishes, is consistent. With prices remaining stable, the government anticipates that the fish supply will continue to meet demand throughout Ramadan and that fish sales will be well managed during the fasting period. And that was the news.